Good evening. Welcome to Lehigh Valley Art Salon. I'm your host, Bathsheba Monk. Tonight, I have some very special guests with us to talk about the new exhibit at the Costume Institute at the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York. The exhibit is Charles James Beyond Fashion, which features the work of Charles James, who was often considered to be America's first couturier, and who was renowned in the 40s and 50s as a master at sculpting fashion to the human form, as well as creating fashion that defined the mid-century glamour. Joining me today is Harold Coda, curator in charge of the Costume Institute at the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York, and Jan Gleer-Reeder, consulting curator for the Brooklyn Museum Costume Collection at the Costume Institute at the Met. Harold and Jan are co-authors of the book Charles James Beyond Fashion, which is the companion book for the show. And in the studio with me is another Charles James, who has lived in the Lehigh Valley for the past 30 years and who just happens to be Charles James' son. Welcome to the Lehigh Valley Art Salon.
Hi.
Thank you.
Great to be here.
Thank you for having us.
Hello.
So, Harold, this exhibit is actually inaugurating an expanded Costume Institute at the Met. Is that correct?
Yes. Not since the early 70s has there been any really a substantial renovation of our facilities. And with the donation and transfer of the Brooklyn Museum collection, which included this motherload of Charles James gowns, we realized that we had to look to our storage facilities as well as reconfigure our exhibition spaces. So we've reopened after 4 years, and it's the space is designated the Anna Wintour Costume Center with a new gallery space, which is like a theatrical black box, which has all kinds of technological possibilities. And that's been endowed by Lizzie and Jonathan Tisch. So we're very excited about it. And James is the first exhibition that is going to be mounted in this space.
Mm-hmm. And why did you pick James for this premiere? Because of the big collection from Brooklyn?
Yes, it was actually for several reasons. There are very few designers who are indisputably considered artists, and James is certainly one of them. In addition to that, with the James collection from the Brooklyn Museum, together with the donation of an archive, a personal archive of his at the time of his death, that was given to us by Homer Lane, his last assistant, it created a body of work that we could really use to address the history of James in a way that hadn't been done before. There was a remarkable show of James's work with which Charles had attended, I believe, in 1982 at the Brooklyn Museum, and we didn't want to repeat it. We wanted Jan and I wanted to do something that added to that knowledge, and with the donation of the archive, we were able to do that. And so it seemed particularly fitting that James, who's considered, America's preeminent couturier, but someone who also never really gave up his British passport, so he's actually correctly considered an Anglo-American designer, though New Yorkers like to take him on as our own. It just seemed particularly appropriate for him to be the one that inaugurated this space.
Uh-huh. And also, in addition, I think as Harold said, the new galleries are outfitted with remarkable technological capabilities. Mm-hmm. And if any designer is worthy of having an analytical approach to his work, it is James. So that was another facet, I think, to the decision.
What kind of technological goodies are you talking about?
Well, we're hoping we're working with an architectural firm, Diller Scofidio and Renfro, and our brief to them was to present an exhibition design that was highly analytical. And as Jan pointed out, there are very few designers who can be subject to the kind of scrutiny that we wanted to apply in this particular exhibition.
Mm-hmm.
And James, if you look at a James gown, it can appear to be like any other beautiful dress from the 1940s and 50s, because, in fact, as Dior said, James anticipated the new look. And so mm-hmm. all of these marvelous confections, we could say, well, it looks sort of like Dior, it looks sort of like Balenciaga, but what makes it James? And the only way you can really understand what makes a James is what James himself said. It was in his technique. And so what Dealer Scofidio has done is they've created animations and utilized high-tech robotic arms that will bore into the seams and design details, focus on certain elements of the garment, and project X-rays of the garments so that you have a fuller understanding of the techniques behind them.
Oh, wow.
The surfaces of a James dress, of course, are what seduces the eye. But what really makes it a kind of extraordinary experience for the viewer is, I think, going to be an understanding of what makes this confection work. Uh-huh. There's all of this engineering and architecture underneath this seductive skin, and that's what we want to reveal to the public.
So what was his process, really?
Well, he was, though he had an exposure to the couture in Paris, he was really an autodidact. He created his own approach to fashion, and that's what's really fun in terms of deconstructing his work. It's very a la prima. It's clear that his hands are involved in every expression of design. Paul Poiret, the first modernist designer of the 20th century, said to him, what I did for color, you do for structure. And he really was someone who cared about that very technical process, but it was a very muscular and direct application of his hands to the fabric that you see expressed in the final work. So seams do astonishing things that aren't typical. A fabric is torqued and worked into configurations that other designers would have a heart attack doing. That's the part that we find really fascinating about his work.
Yeah, he doesn't seem to be.
His preference actually was to work directly on a client's body if they would be patient enough to do it. He would literally pin and create a design as his client was standing there. Mm-hmm. Or in lieu of that, he would have a mannequin or a dress form that he had padded out to the shape of his client and literally drape the fabric around that shape and work it that way. So as Harold said, it was very muscular and very, very hands-on, very direct.
And what Jan's referring to with the mannequins is fascinating in of itself. We have one mannequin where you see a jacket beginning to take form, and the spontaneity of how he's working. He always described creating a wall of air between his client's body and the garment, and the way he substantiates that wall of air, he's just grabbed a clump of tissue, scrunched it up, and pushed it in, around the rib cage. It's more New York School of abstract expressionism than it is an Ang portrait. It's something that is very direct, very spontaneous, and a little bit mad. I mean, it looks crazy.
Now, I'm looking forward to seeing the exhibit when it opens on May the 8th. This is Charles. And it sounds like what you've done with the X-rays is a bit like what the Chicago Museum of Science and Industry did with the MRIs to evaluate the structure of a garment.
Yes, absolutely. I think, today when, we go to the store and we buy a garment, it's always about not having any structure. It's either a very elastic fabric or it's cut in a way that accommodates, our body. But with what James did was he created your body for you. It was a kind of exoskeleton that transposed his idea of the ideal body onto your own body.
Everybody looks great in his in his clothing. That's the thing that I noticed when I was looking through the books and online. And also, he's not big on darts. It's like, I don't know, it seems almost like armor in a way. It's like peace dawned. I don't know if that makes sense.
Well, one of his credos was that he never, that he always wanted to minimize the number of seams, and he never used side seams, which he considered vulgar. And also it was the displacement of darts. They were not used in the usual. He did use darts, but not in the typical dressmaker locations.
But he did have the Pavlovian, didn't I read that, the Pavlovian waist that would expand after you ate?
Well, he was very early on creative. You know, he understood the anatomy, well, he studied the anatomy so well, and his understanding of it was quite prescient. He created a waistline that was an ellipses. So it was angled, and angled it was somewhat smaller. As it became more and more leveled, it became wider. So he used sort of the physics of, you know, just planar geometry and transposed it to clothing and ended up with this kind of solution for something that I think we all suffer from is an expanding waistline.
Right, the Pavlovian waistline. Yeah. With this kind of approach, though, it seemed like he would rework stuff a lot or different ideas a lot.
Yes, he did. Right. Once he got an idea, he would rework it and refine it over a period of years. It was, as Harold has always said, it was never a finished finished concept. You know, it was always ongoing.
Elaine Louie in the New York Times, I don't know if you saw that article. Mm-hmm. She was writing about accompanying James to an event. And
the Jefferson Museum.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And she wanted to have him. She had the idea, he should make my wedding dress. And his associates, like Lane, said, don't do it. He'll never finish it. And mm-hmm. Does that sound like him to you?
Well, towards the end, yes. Yes, I think that he wasn't really completing anything, because this was in the 70s when that was taking place. But, the stories, you know, he was notorious for not completing commissions on time, and there were definitely times when clients were disappointed that he did not finish something when they were expecting it.
But part of that is related to his perfectionism. On the one hand, you know, he was very spontaneous and I would say had a kind of audacious kind of ambition. On the other hand, what makes the clothing so extraordinary is the perfectionism that he applies to it. Mm-hmm. He has a standard that he sets for himself that is so high that even when he ends up with something like the cloverleaf gown, which he considered one of his masterwork, he revisits it, and he returns to it, and he plays with it some more. Nothing is ever completely resolved for him. It mm-hmm. always can be better.
Right.
It's what makes him, I think, more an artist than a fashion designer. Mm-hmm. He's more like a sculptor who isn't working from season to season. He's evolving an idea over time. Mm-hmm. And that's what his clothing is like.
Yeah. I want to talk about some of his iconic designs, and we're going to stop for a short break here right now. This is Lehigh Valley Art Salon. I'm Bathsheba Monk.
For program support on WDIY, we thank the Old Allentown Preservation Association, presenting the 37th Old Allentown House Tour featuring homes in the Old Allentown Historic District on Saturday, May 10th from 12 to 6 p.m. The Old Allentown Street Festival featuring vendors, entertainment, face painting, puppet shows, and a classic car show on Gordon Street between 8th and 10th. Tickets and Mother's Day flowers available at the information table at 8th and Gordon. For information, oldallentown.org.
This is Lehigh Valley Art Salon. I'm Bathsheba Monk. We're talking to Harold Coda and Jan Glare Reeder and Charles James about the new show at the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York, Charles James Beyond Fashion. And I want to talk a little bit about some of his iconic designs. Jan, do you want to talk about those? Like the zipper taxi dress,
okay,
and the figure eight skirt and the puffer jacket.
Right. Yes, I think that, of course, the first iconic design, his first real original one, was the so-called taxi dress, which was a wrap dress that spiraled around the body. At the time he conceived it, it was a completely out-of-the-box idea. It was a time when fashion was just beginning to change from the tubular so-called flapper dresses of the 1920s. And he came up with this idea that was completely unorthodox. And he himself said that it was so simple that it could be donned in a taxi, and that's why he dubbed it the taxi mm-hmm. dress. So his first one is actually a dress that wraps around the body like a snake, as one of his clients said, and just hooks with three clasps on one side. And then the next version of it, which was probably a year or two after that, was to use a spiraling zipper around the body as the closure. And this was one example, too, where he was always in the forefront of the of innovations, because the zipper was just being used. He was probably one of the first to use it in fashionable dress.
Like as a decoration?
Yeah, mm-hmm. It was a decoration.
Structurally and as a decoration.
Mm-hmm. As well as, sorry? Yeah, yeah. And it actually followed the lines of the dress, and mm-hmm. you know, and emphasized the lines.
And I want one.
Lines of the dress.
And mm-hmm. I want one of those.
I know.
You want to get undressed in a taxi?
I do. It's been my dream.
You know, it was one of the first of pieces of 20th century clothing that was soft and comfortable, like the way we like to dress now. When you think of Diane von Furstenberg wrap dresses and others, that's what it was.
Right. Did she take off from that, do you think? Is that?
There's not a direct line, no. Mm.
But it's more establishing the vocabulary for
right.
a new style.
I see.
That, you know, then just filters down into everything. And okay. So many of his innovations, I mean, if you think about the puffer jacket,
mm-hmm.
You can't say that, you know, the down jacket is a direct reference to him. But he does it first, and it enters the imagination,
yeah.
and he investigates the technology in a way that actually is more interesting than most down jackets.
As a matter of fact, that down jacket it's even mentioned in this New York Times article on the 24th that you were mentioning, Bathsheba, by mm-hmm. Elaine Louie. And that jacket goes back to the 1938, and Salvador Dali called it the first soft sculpture back then. And in this article, they talk about at the Everson Museum in Syracuse how my father, Charles James, had traveled up to the Everson Museum with Jerry Hall and a few other people and Elaine Louie. And while they were eating dinner, and Jerry Hall was wearing that puffer jacket, he walked over to her and asked her to take it off and put it on Elaine Louie. She had a chance to walk around and wear it and enjoy it.
He was always typical, repurposing right? his clothes for new clients.
And the clients always knew that in the end, he owned the clothes, regardless of whether they paid for them or whatever. If he asked to have them back,
uh-huh.
he got them back. Right?
So is that part of the new look? Somebody mentioned the new look. Is that part of the new look?
No.
No.
Oh, what
no.
is the new look then? What is that?
Jan, do you want to address that? Because I think really what's so original about him is with the starfish dress, where we have in the exhibition, surrounded by all of these dresses from the 40s and 50s, this one dress from the 30s, which anticipates the new look. It is a strapless, so very early for a strapless, but unlike the other straplesses of the 1930s, he creates a structured skirt. It's very airy, but it's structured. And so the silhouette anticipates what comes to be called the Dior new look, which was right. Dior's return to a Belle Epoque or Edwardian glamour. And James did it first.
Right, when you think that's one of his other talk about his iconic designs, and we're so incredibly pleased to have it in the collection now, is the first, one of the very first strapless dresses. And we take that for granted now, but in the 30s, strapless dresses were very few and far between. So, but as Harold said, the new look was characterized by this, you know, this full-blown romanticism. But also very reshaping of the body in terms of accentuating the hips and diminishing the shape of the of the waist and very soft shoulders, and all of these silhouettes and shapes are ones that James had been working with for before Dior came out with it in a burst of glory in 1947. So he was he was so prescient in his thinking.
I guess designers really influence each other, and is the new look prevalent today? I mean, is there any vestige of that left?
Well, one of the things about the new look was it returned the uncorseted body. You know, from the 1920s through the 30s, you really didn't wear a boned bodice or, a corseted. You didn't have a corseted waistline. It was more the live, natural body. If you have had the ideal silhouette, there are always women who don't, and then they had girdles. But in terms of a high fashion silhouette, you didn't have a corseted waistline, and the new look returns to that kind of romanticism of the pre-World War I period. You still see that in red carpet dressing. You know, a full-blown ball gown is related to that period. They go back to the heyday, the glory days of the haute couture in the 1940s and 50s, the post-war period. And so, yes, there is the vestige of that. But in terms of our real lives, not so much.
Mm-hmm.
But in our fantasy life,
yes.
Very much
so. I want that fantasy figure for yes. One of his fantasy dresses.
Figure requires a certain amount of pain and constriction, which people on a day-to-day basis are really not willing
right.
to.
And it requires a different aesthetic on the part of what we think of as a contemporary body. Mm. He liked a very fecund silhouette, really rounded, wide hips, which I think is quite glamorous. But if you say to a woman, put on this coat, it'll make your hips bigger. I don't know if you have very many people who are going to be signing up on that.
Many takers.
We're hoping to change that with the exhibition, because when you see his tailoring, it's breathtaking.
Uh-huh. And I think that's worth noting, because, we're talking about almost as an engineer and an architect what he did with the form and the structure, but the art is amazing. Not only the color
absolutely.
He uses, but the way the garments look are like definitely like art. And he did a lot of things to innovate in fashion. But at the same time, he lived his life as an artist to create his work. And I think the book really does a great job that accompanies the exhibit that you two have written, capturing more detail on his biography than I've ever seen written before. And I learned a lot about my own father from the book. But also you kind of point out how much he was an artist by pulling out great quotes like this one, where you say, a great designer, this is something he said, a great designer does not seek acceptance. He challenges popularity, and by the force of his convictions, renders popular in the end what the public hates at first sight.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, he has a legacy that, people like the artist in a garret, and they focus, on his last years in the Chelsea Hotel as if it's this kind of, sad trajectory of, like a comet in its brilliance and then falling into this kind of penurious state. But in fact, James himself comes off as a success if you think about him in terms of the broader history of fashion. When we do this show, it's in fact realizing something that he knew in his lifetime, that his work transcended his own time. And mm-hmm. so designers and young people will be coming into this exhibition and utilizing his work in the way that he intended it when he had it donated to the Brooklyn Museum, mm-hmm. which is they're a motherlode of inspiration and ideas. And not to copy, because it's impossible to copy his work. I mean, it really is such an extraordinary output, but it requires a certain kind of level of technical investment. Mm-hmm. But what they're going to be inspired by is the sheer magic of someone who goes towards this holy grail of self-expression and does not compromise.
Yeah.
Well, through his whole life, he does not compromise.
And that was one of the things, I think there was a quote, Harold, that you said somewhere, I copied it down here, though, is that he really did see himself as an educator for design students. and designing. So I'm sure he'd be really happy with this exhibit.
And he was a great mentor, you know. Even though he ended up feeling betrayed by Halston in the end, he was a mentor to Halston. Arnold Skazi was an assistant. Adolfo, he had a lot of designers of a heartbeat older generation, but they in turn had people who were acolytes. So his way of working and his ideas about the body and dress, I think, are now part of the vocabulary, mm-hmm. and as part of the vocabulary, somewhat invisible to us. But when you come back to seeing the pieces that originated that conversation, it's going to be clear his influence.
Mm-hmm. Well, the opening gala for this is on May 5th, is that correct?
Yes.
Yes, and it's considered one of the most prestigious events in New York City. And it's white tie and decorations. And I wanted to ask you, what is decorations?
Well, Anna actually has decorations. I mean, she's gotten all of these decorations from the Queen of England. But I wrote to an email to a friend, says, what is your decoration? I said, you know, I lost my Phi Beta Kappa key. I don't have anything to put off.
You don't have anything to, okay.
I don't know, Jan, do you, Charles? I mean, you guys have anything? I have nothing to put on my sash.
I might have something passed down through the family.
Oh, you would. You know, because Charles, you know, they come from a line of military people. Uh-huh. I'm sure you have something.
I'm sure he's going to dig up something. So that's one of the hardest tickets in New York, I hear. But the exhibit is going to open to the public on May 8th. Is that correct?
Yes, on May 8th.
And it's going to run until August 10th. And now, is this part of the regular, is this a ticketed event?
No. The museum is such that even the special exhibitions are open to the public who, you know, you come in, pay your admission, and then the whole menu of exhibitions at the institution are available to you.
Okay, great. Okay, so and people who want to attend that, and I'm sure everybody will want to, should go on to the MetropolitanMuseumOfArt.com website and check it out, what the hours are, and your book. Where can they find your wonderful book?
I hope everywhere.
Okay. It's already,
we're working with Yale, uh-huh. and their distribution is wide, and so mm-hmm. Any bookstore with art books,
we'll have it.
And fashion books will have it.
You know, you're number two on Amazon already, so I'm jealous.
We are.
You are
on
this
Amazon.
Morning.
Yep. Oh, that's great.
So
that's
I'm very jealous. So I think we're sort of out of time here. I'd like to thank you both, Harold Coda and Jan Reeder, for being with us today, and also Charles James the Younger for being with us and talking about the new exhibit, which is at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, called Charles James Beyond Fashion, and also about the book, which is the companion book, which Harold and Jan wrote, called Charles James Beyond Fashion. So thank you very much for being with us tonight.
And thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure.
Thanks.
Okay, this is Bathsheba Monk. This is Lehigh Valley Art Salon.